Gary Kah, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jan. It's always good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You and I have talked for years about the fact that the globalists are waiting for a crisis. We have one. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on the crisis angle, and let's apply it to what's going on right now.
I think everyone in your audience would probably agree that the globalists and socialists and the media are helping to foment nothing short of mass hysteria through their over-the-top sensational coverage of all of this. I personally believe that a lot of that is intentional. The liberal press and media these days almost always have ulterior motives in covering events the way that they do, and this is not an exception. A few days ago, I watched New York Governor Andrew Cuomo accurately state during a press conference, he said, crisis forces change. I wondered if he recognized the profoundness of that statement in the broader context when he made it. Because the media and the political comrades on the left understand that concept very well and operate under the guiding principle, never let a crisis go to waste. Mm-hmm. So the fact is they simply cannot resist turning this health crisis into an opportunity to further their globalist socialist agenda. And so we're seeing that play out in real time now.
I think the one who has emerged front and center in all of this, not that he's been in the shadows before, but he's getting a lot of attention, would be globalist in chief Bill Gates. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has pledged $10 billion for a long time, but their goal is, of course, vaccines for everyone. Bill Gates' coronavirus vaccine is going to be entering human trials after it gets FDA approval. And Gates has moved, he's just literally moved center stage. I've got a number of sound bites of Bill and I want to play. Let's put it this way. Nothing he does is very Christian friendly. I want to play a quick clip of him because the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they're connected with many facets of this pandemic, including relationships and or their vaccine and ID agenda. In 2020, Bill Gates predicted a pandemic like the 1918 Spanish flu that would spread very quickly. I want to play a clip here, Bill Gates. This is going back to 2015, which I think is intriguing, where he's going to talk about a crisis with a virus is on its way. This is 2015. The best way to tackle this, of course, again, is about vaccinating everyone on the planet.
If anything kills over 10 million people in the next few decades, it's most likely to be a highly infectious virus rather than a war. Not missiles, but microbes. Now, part of the reason for this is that we have invested a huge amount in nuclear deterrence. But we've actually invested very little in a system to stop an epidemic. We're not ready for the next epidemic. You can have a virus where people feel well enough while they're infectious that they get on a plane or they go to a market. The source of the virus could be a natural epidemic like Ebola, or it could be bioterrorism. And so there are things that would literally make things 1,000 times worse. In fact, let's look at a model of a virus spread through the air like the Spanish flu back in 1918. So here's what would happen. It would spread throughout the world very, very quickly. And you can see there's over 30 million people die from that epidemic. So this is a serious problem. We should be concerned. But in fact, we can build a really good response system. We have the benefits of all the science and technology that we talk about here. We've got cell phones to get information from the public and get information out to them. We have satellite maps where we can see where people are and where they're moving. We have advances in biology that should dramatically change the turnaround time to look at a pathogen and be able to make drugs and vaccines that fit for that pathogen. So we can have tools, but those tools need to be put into an overall global health system, and we need preparedness. The best lessons, I think, on how to get prepared are, again, what we do for war.
Gary Kah, the chatter online is almost like Bill Gates is Antichrist-esque. He may be a forerunner, I don't know, but your thoughts?
When I was researching over the last 3 weeks this whole coronavirus and some of the push behind resolving it and where it's coming from and what's being proposed, I have come across Bill Gates' name over and over again. Their foundation has been supporting a number of different developments, moving us toward globalization, a global vaccine, a digital ID for everyone. If I may, I just want to focus for a moment on something that took place last October called Event 201. There were some very powerful players allied really with Ghebreyesus, the head of the UN's World Health Organization, and the United Nations. They generally agree, I think it's fair to say this, that global problems demand global solutions, i.e. world government. Just 2 months before this virus was first known to exist in China, a globalist strategy session was held in New York City, of all places, and it was called Event 201, a global pandemic exercise. The purpose of this select gathering was really to game out, if you will, the response to a global virus pandemic. Now, those who supported or attended Event 201 included the United Nations Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, NBC, the CIA, the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine / Bloomberg School of Public Health, and the Chinese Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Wow. I mean, this was less than 2 months before the coronavirus began to come out and spread. And they're discussing everything in detail of a virus so similar to what we're witnessing right now. It's, you know, it's either the most unbelievable coincidence in the world or somebody knew that something was coming.
You're right. This was October 18th, 2019. This really broke in China around about November, early December 2019. Yes, you listed appropriately all the organizations involved. Folks, it's called Event 201. Look it up online. Do some research on it, Event 201. Again, it was the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security in partnership with all these outfits, all of them globalist outfits Gary's talked about. Go ahead, Gary.
Their goal, when I was looking into this, I wanted to get to the bottom line. What's this really all about? What were they discussing at this meeting? It became quite clear. Their main goal, I would say, is to control the entire narrative of a global pandemic from the top down, centralizing the flow of information and then flooding the media market with their, you could call it, designed messaging in order to manage and modify our behavior. That's what was discussed over and over at their strategy session. They called this focused, I call it propaganda technique. They called it flooding the zone, and they use that term over and over. We're witnessing that right now. They're flooding the zone with a contrived, pre-contrived narrative on everything that the Trump administration is finding very difficult to overcome because it's being thrown at people from every different angle. So we have to break through all of that and look at what common sense would dictate as a response rather than what these people, how they want us to respond to it. Also, as far as the article that I just wrote on this, Jan, that I forwarded to you, is COVID-19: a global conditioning. And people can read that article in its entirety at our website, which is garycod.org. Just go to our homepage. You can click on that article. Also, the article before that, which is quite relevant, which is titled It's Game On, which I wrote back in January. So I hope people will take advantage of that and be informed on this. And I just want to say this, Jan. Honestly, I am so sick of talking about this virus and seeing it every time I turn on the television or radio. So if we have listeners right now that don't want to hear one more thing about this, I completely get it because I feel like running the opposite direction. But there were some really important things that I came across in my research, and I try to focus on that. And it's the kind of stuff that you don't get through the media each day, and it helps us to understand this
Gary,
a lot better.
Here's the thing. I think because this crisis has to do with health, there's something in every person that they cherish their health, and they seem more than willing to give up some freedoms. But, you know, they did not panic like this, and we've had previous outbreaks. We've had SARS, H1N1. I can even give some stats, and I will a little bit later, perhaps. We've had Ebola. We've had MERS. We've had the average flu. And with all of those, in spite of tens and tens of thousands of victims, there was no call for global mass vaccinations. There was no suggestion in any of those outbreaks of global government. Of course, Donald Trump and the U.S. stand in the way of global government. You obviously see the globalists and the socialists and the leftist media are fanning the flames of all of this, which I don't think they did in the outbreaks that I just already mentioned, H1N1, etc.
No, they were ready to jump this time. Everything was in place. In fact, they were antsy. They were hoping they could move forward on something like this even before now, but they really haven't been able to. The ultimate goal as far as global government is concerned by globalists is they understand that the global economy has to either collapse or disintegrate to a large extent in order for them to be able to introduce their new global economic system that is central to what they want to do in the future under a global government. I think they view this pandemic as a way to help orchestrate that, to intensify the call for globalization and a type of false global unity. We all want to see this crisis solved, and to the degree that nations can cooperate in doing that, that's great. But there's a lot more to this when you do the underlying research and you see the organizations involved in pushing all of this forward. It's the same old groups that I've been writing about for 25 years. You know.
Let me say just a little bit about your background, and I have every time we've talked on air, I've given extensive background. You've been studying this for some 30 years because you were involved in the trade of state of Indiana back in the late 80s and 90s, and you began to hear talk back then, which right now is 30 years ago, believe it or not. You began to hear talk about this love for a one-world system. You began to connect the dots, wrote books, and then the rest is history. So folks have turned to you very often for insights on the one-world system. And again, this isn't tinfoil hat. It's right out of the book of Revelation 13, chapter 17, global government's coming. I want to play one more Bill Gates clip. He's pushing mass vaccinations, and he says here, and there may be some truth to what he says in this little clip here, he's going to say, look, we're never going back to auditoriums. We're never going back to stadiums unless every single person is vaccinated.
Now, Gates openly is talking about vaccinating everybody on the planet.
Of all the vaccine constructs, the seven most promising of those, even though we'll end up picking at most two of them, we're going to fund factories for all seven just so that we don't waste time in serially saying, okay, which vaccine works, and then building the factory. Because to get to the best case that people like myself and Dr. Fauci are saying is about 18 months, we need to do safety and efficacy and build manufacturing, and they're different for the different constructs. And so we'll abandon, it'll be a few billion dollars we'll waste on manufacturing for the constructs that don't get picked because something else is better. But a few billion in this, the situation we're in, where there's trillions of dollars, that's a thousand times more, trillions of dollars being lost economically, it is worth it. And normal government procurement processes and understanding which are the right seven, in a few months, those may kick in. But our foundation, we can get that bootstrapped and get it going and save months because every month counts. Things can reopen if we do the right things in the summer, but it won't be completely normal. You'll still be very worried. We may decide masks are important, although right now they're in short supply for health workers, so people should not go and hoard those. But the capacity of that can be brought up, so it may be something that, like China today, everybody who's walking around is wearing one of those. We'll have a lot of unusual measures until we get the world vaccinated. 7 billion people, that's a tall order, but it is where we need to get to, despite a lot of things in between now and then, to minimize the damage.
Gates openly talks about vaccinating everyone on the planet before life can return to, quote, normal. And it's not just Gates saying this. His little buddy Fauci has also implied this. The Australian Prime Minister has stated that life will not return to normal until there is a vaccine. Johnson & Johnson, who participated in the UN Gates Event 201 pandemic simulation, is preparing mass vaccines. Denmark has mandated vaccines through an emergency order. And in Italy, you may have to have a COVID pass to prove you have a marker of immunity, just to return to work after this lockdown.
So our foundation is engaged in projecting what's going to go on, the modeling. Our partner IHME is telling each state what they should think about in terms of ventilators and capacity. Further on out, the work we're doing now to find a therapeutic drug to reduce the disease, to cut the deaths down, we're hopeful that even in 6 months, some of those will have been approved. But the ultimate solution, the only thing that really lets us go back completely to normal and feel good about sitting in a stadium with lots of other people, is to create a vaccine and not just take care of our country, but take that vaccine out to the global population so that we have vast immunity and this thing, no matter what, isn't going to spread in large numbers.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell. I have on the line Gary Kah. You can learn a lot more at GaryKah.org. And I'm playing off a recent article of his that will be posted at GaryKah.org. Gary, and I want to get to ID 2020 in just a moment or two. First, let me just build a little bit on what Bill Gates has just talked about, that we're never going to feel secure going into a crowded location again. I want to pick up on something else, and that is his love for population reduction. Again, we may sound conspiratorial, but he's very open about this, reducing the population enormously.
The Bill Gates Foundation has been involved in funding so many different aspects of the globalist agenda, especially over the last 10 years, and it seems like it's increasing in momentum. But what I found through my research on the crisis we're facing right now is that there is a very close connection between the push for a global vaccine and the pursuit of digital ID. In fact, it appears that there's a marriage of sorts taking place between those two. And I'm concerned that a global vaccine for the coronavirus could actually be tied together with a digital ID, because the Gates Foundation is supporting both. And there's an equal drive for this within Gavi, which is the Global Alliance of Vaccines and Immunizations. And so to see the Gates Foundation working closely on digital ID as well as with Gavi, I think is a legitimate concern and something that we need to keep our eyes on.
Right, but inherent in these organizations is a longing to reduce the population of the planet from 7 billion down to 500 million. We've got the Georgia Guidestones, my goodness, erected in Georgia in 1980, spells out the globalist goal of reducing Earth's population through eugenics and other means. They want the population reduced to a few hundred million. I know that sounds terrible, and I'm going to keep hammering on it because it's a reality. They want a one-world government. That is spelled out on the Georgia Guidestones.
You're absolutely right. So we do have to take that seriously, because that's what the people at the forefront of the globalist
drive believe
and what they want. If I can bring for a moment into the picture Tedros Ghebreyesus,
please,
director of the World Health Organization. Early on, he did everything possible, really, to downplay the severity of the coronavirus. When you look into his background, he's an Ethiopian socialist revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
He's a close ally of China. He clearly wanted to protect China's image as best as he could early on as this virus spread. But I believe there may have even been more to his story and his motivation. And I want to be careful here. I don't want to falsely accuse anybody of anything. But is it possible that maybe he actually wanted this virus to spread, that he wanted to give it some time to get out there? Because he dragged his feet for so long when he knew there was a problem. He knew what was going on in China. He's so close to him, it would have been impossible for him not to when other people were finding out about it. This idea of a global problem demanding a global response and solution, it's a platform, if you will, to help push things toward global government. Ghebreyesus happens to be a strong advocate for universal health coverage. He's big into the green movement, the global climate and environmental change, and very radical on all of that. And he also wants to dramatically transform and empower the World Health Organization. And what organization more than any other has been pushing population control around the world? This virus certainly takes out quite a few people, not near as much as what globalists would like to see in terms of an overall reduction in the population of Earth. But it's a start. I realize this sounds incredibly evil or wicked, and it is,
but
even to accuse somebody of possibly wanting that sounds evil, but yet they've come out and said it. They've set goals for population reduction, and there are only a few ways that you can reduce the population of the Earth, and this is one of them.
The Gates Foundation is the second largest contributor behind the United States to the World Health Organization, which, as we speak, we know that some of the powers that be in Washington are reexamining all of this support of the World Health Organization, and I'm glad you gave some of that background on this fella. The Ethiopian, he's socialist Marxist, obviously very close ties to communist China. Folks, I want to continue our discussion here. We're talking about some civil liberties are leaving. We've got a strange new value system here in America where, okay, let's just say liquor stores are essential, but churches are not. Churches are being slammed shut. At least they were around Easter time. We've got a mayor of New York City who says to the churches there, if you don't behave, I'm going to shut you forever. So we've got some almost dictatorial-like conversation coming from particularly some on the left. I've referenced coming into the program. We've got conversation about immunity cards you're going to have to carry about. Again, some of this leaps out of the Book of Revelation, where it talks about all of these kinds of things proliferate during the tribulation from which the church is absent. I'm coming back with Gary in just a minute or two. We need to talk about ID 2020, the ID 2020 Alliance. These are things you can only read about online. You're not going to hear about any of this from Fox News, from your general nighttime national news, NBC, ABC, CBS, CNN. We'll never talk about some of these things. You'll only find it online from a few programs, such as Understanding the Times Radio, trying to help you understand what on earth is going on behind the scenes.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
There's a need for a new world order, but it has different characteristics in different parts of the world.
Never before has a new world order had to be assembled from so many different perceptions or on so global a scale. Nor has any previous order had to combine the attributes of the historic balance of power system with global democratic opinion and the exploding technology of the contemporary period.
After 1989, President Bush said, and it was a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order.
I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period, when really a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. It isn't just a crisis.
What is at stake is more than one small country. It is a big idea, a new world order, where diverse nations are drawn together in common cause to achieve the universal aspirations of mankind. Peace and security, freedom, and the rule of law.
So, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, a new world is emerging. It is a new world order with significantly different and radically new challenges.
Those were the voices of Joe Biden, George H.W. Bush, Henry Kissinger, John Kerry, Bill Clinton, UK Prime Minister in the past, Gordon Brown, promoting the concept of a one-world, new-world order. Gary Kopp, give me your thoughts on this.
Obviously, it's not a coincidence that all these people are using the same terminology. They all have a track record of being globalists. Some of them have gone beyond just using the term New World Order, which is more mysterious. They've actually come out and openly called for world government, something that Gordon Brown continues to do. Just a couple weeks ago, again, came out very openly in favor of having a world government needed to solve this crisis. I think 30 years ago, people were more careful in how they used that term, but now, because there are so many people in the world that have already been conditioned and are backing their efforts and want to see a world government, they're becoming emboldened, and so we're seeing this much more out in the open. They're not really hiding it anymore. We need to understand, too, Jan, that the socialist movement is one and the same with the globalist movement. It's a global socialist movement that's trying to develop this world government. So as we see the increase in socialism, those who prefer socialism in this country, now over 30%, that also trends favorably toward globalization and having a world government. People need to connect those two dots and realize it's one and the same.
Your thoughts on the loss of the civil liberties as you and I are speaking, it seems like every day there's the potential loss of more and more civil liberties. Again, this immunity card that they're suggesting now that everyone's going to have to carry about with them to get into any kind of a venue. Give me your thoughts on this.
A lot of this is moving forward right in line and parallel with ID 2020 that you just mentioned a few moments ago. So I just want to focus on that for a moment. There's a group of very influential globalist partners. They're known as the ID 2020 Alliance. They are pushing very hard to develop a digital ID that really every human on the planet will need to do just about anything if they have their way. Based on the ID 2020 Alliance Manifesto, which was drafted back in 2018, by the way, in partnership with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, this coming digital ID will be touted as a fundamental and universal human right. That's how they're going to try to bring this in, a fundamental and universal human right, even though in reality we're going to be giving up a lot of our rights in order to move forward with this digital ID. So that's what we have to be aware of. They make it sound so good, Jan. It's all about privacy and everyone being in control of their own digital identity. And when you look, again, at the organizations involved that funnel into ID 2020 Alliance, it's a body consisting of top government leaders, technologists, global banking reps, distinguished members of academia, UN agencies, NGOs, and various strategic private sector companies. When they met in New York City for their ID 2020 summit last fall, they did so, in their own words, to explore the potentials and challenges of digital identity. But the particular summit, the last one, when you look at it, it was completely sponsored by globalists. It was sponsored by the UN Office of Information Communications Technology, the UN Refugee Agency, the International Telecommunications Union, and also the Danish mission to the UN. So you have these and other partners, but the most influential ID 2020 Alliance partners are Microsoft, Gavi, G-A-V-I, it stands for Global Alliance of Vaccines and Immunizations, the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, the UN, and various international banking leaders, as well as the World Economic Forum. And this is key, because they've been using the World Economic Forum as a type of launching platform for their ID 2020 programs. So that's actually where ID 2020 launched their certification mark, something new. They did so in January of 2019 at the World Economic Forum in Davos. There's so many players in this, but it's the same people that have been pushing global government for years. They're also behind this ID 2020. And if this goes through, you can kiss goodbye any semblance of civil liberties and freedom and control over our personal lives, because this is going to be universal, and you're going to have this coming digital ID eventually mark to do anything on the planet. And we're seeing the beginnings of this. It's ready to go. The technology is there. They're just waiting for the right opportunity to implement it all.
A lot of people are speculating this is the mark of the beast. Folks, remember, to have a mark of the beast, we need a beast, okay? The beast isn't here yet. The beast shows up, the Antichrist shows up during the tribulation. Now, is this a precursor? It absolutely could be a precursor. It could even be a warning sign here to Christians. Again, the church is not present when the beast shows up, but nonetheless, I don't know that that is the point. The point is the hour is so late. We're talking about this ID 2020 Alliance, as Gary has said. My goodness, Microsoft, Rockefeller Foundation, UN, international banking leaders, World Economic Forum. This World Economic Forum, frankly, Gary, we could probably do an hour or two just on the World Economic Forum. In short, and this is from Gary's article, which you can find at garycaw.org. In short, he writes, the ID 2020 certification mark is intended to further digitize global commerce and serve as a stepping stone toward a personal digital ID for every man, woman, and child. In the Alliance's own words, a unique convergence of trends provides an unprecedented opportunity to make a coordinated, concerted push to provide digital ID to everyone. This is sort of the talk of folks that are online because there are videos about this. Folks, I can't get to all the videos you send. They're wonderful, but I can't get to them because they're just way too many. Gary, it seems to me that because this has to do with health, I've referenced this a few minutes ago, suddenly people are more open to listening about this.
You're right. And ID 2020, unveiling their latest program at their last meeting, in their own words, they said, recognizing the opportunity for immunization to serve as a platform for digital identity. This program leverages existing vaccination and birth registration operations to offer newborns a persistent and portable biometrically linked digital identity. So they tie together vaccinations, immunization with digital identity. And this is kind of a new thing. This is a big step forward toward globalization and having a universal ID for everyone. And I wrote my article. I said, here's the bottom line. Dedicated globalists involved in so-called solving the COVID-19 pandemic are also putting in place a one-world cashless commerce system that will include a device-free digital identification mark for every human being. And they stress that, a device-free identification mark for every human being. That's their ultimate goal. The UN's world government agenda, in cooperation with its closest allies, has permeated and is driving the international response to the coronavirus. And I went on to say, if pro-UN globalists can't pull off their new world order on this round, they'll simply learn from this experience, make a few adjustments, mm-hmm. and try again later.
And could they try again either with another pandemic or what they keep saying, corona is going to kind of come and go, just like the common flu comes and goes. Okay, so we have it again early fall, let's say, for discussion, or next January. Are we going to go through this all over again? Don't you think, Gary Kaa, that most of society will be more than willing to line up for a vaccine?
I believe they will. It's still about a year away is what I'm understanding, at least if it's going to be tested properly and so forth. What I'm waiting to see is, are they actually going to attach to that vaccination some type of digital ID
right.
system? And that remains to be seen. I don't know if they can pull it off that quickly. They're ready to do it, but if they feel that the public isn't ready to receive it yet, they might not. So that's what I'm keeping a watchful eye on.
Well, and that's where the idea and the conversation and the chatter online, of course, is this part of the Mark of the Beast system. Folks, we don't know. And then comes the dilemma, do we take this or not? Again, to have the Mark of the Beast system, you need a beast. We need the Antichrist. And is this going to be implemented before the tribulation? We don't know. I think the point is, the hour is so very late. And I think the other point, Gary Kaa, is the fact that the world is in such turmoil. The fact that there's just such gross economic damage being done as we speak. We don't know how long this is going to go on, but the world is just kind of, I think they're getting set up again. I keep saying, for this man with a plan, this Mr. Fix-It, they're going to be crying for a savior pretty soon unless things can turn around. And I appreciate some of the positive words coming out of our president and vice president that things are going to turn around and go back to normal. I personally don't believe that. What are your thoughts?
I see some positive things coming out of this crisis, but I see a lot more negative. If 20% unemployment is reached in this country, it doesn't matter what President Trump does, we're not going to be able to make a full recovery. I mean, not anytime soon. There's just no way. I saw a survey recently that said at least 5%, if not 10%, of all restaurants will be permanently closed.
Right, right.
They're not going to make it through this. They were operating too close to the edge already. And the same can be said for other businesses. If we do indeed hit 20% unemployment, if we rebound really well, a year from now, maybe it would be down under 10% again, but to come down to 3.5% where it was, to me that seems like a pipe dream. It is going to have a long-lasting impact, and especially if we see wave after wave of this type of coronavirus resurgence or even other pandemics. All of this plays into the hands of the globalists because they're going to use every opportunity they get to further their narrative and call for world government as the solution to it and trying to empower the World Health Organization. Having said all that, maybe even a bigger concern than all of this is the fact that we're already in a politically charged atmosphere in this country where you see socialists coming down really hard against Christians and Jews. We're increasingly being viewed with contempt by the leftist media and this growing socialist movement. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if ultimately somehow Jews and Christians are somehow blamed for the COVID-19 outbreak, even though it began in China. And in fact, I just got some information from a friend in Israel. We see this already beginning to happen in the Middle East. There's propaganda currently being circulated in parts of Gaza and the West Bank saying that the Jews are behind this virus.
Mm-hmm.
I saw one cartoon with an Israeli flag draped from the airplane flying over people spraying coronavirus on them, infecting them. It has now spread to Turkey, this propaganda. Some of Turkey's leaders are moving forward with this narrative. Iran is as well. So if this catches on in Europe in the next few weeks and months, we could see a real strong outlash coming against Jews. For many years, for centuries, there's been a saying now that first the Saturday people, then the Sunday people. In other words, when persecution begins, a lot of times it starts against the Jews first, and then Christians are gathered up as well. And we saw that happen with Hitler, for example, during World War II. This needs to concern all of us, Christians and Jews alike. Our Judeo-Christian ethic is being threatened and severely tested in this country. So we need to be able to take a bold stand. We need to do so in a spirit of love and truth. But we can't back down. We've got to be bold while we can be bold and get the gospel message out and share the truth in love. Because I don't believe we're going to have a whole lot longer to be able to speak openly like we are right now in this program. And I don't believe that's a pessimistic view. I believe it's just reality. This is where things are going. And if you can't see that right now, you're at least part of the way asleep, and you need to wake up and get with it and pursue the Lord and be walking in step with Him, because He wants us to be knowledgeable. He does not want us to be deceived. He wants us to be aware of these things so that we can be discerning and effective for Him in these last days.
I'm so glad you brought up the persecution angle. And, of course, the New York Times a month ago said that evangelicals, it's all our fault that we have this crisis going on. I covered that with Michelle Bachman in my two-part series. Gary's right. You got to blame somebody. Sometimes they start with the Jews, but they never end with the Jews. I want to play one more Bill Gates clip. It's very short. It's a minute long, and it's Bill Gates praising China. Now, folks, that ought to set alarm bells off when you start hearing China being praised. Here he states that they've crushed the pandemic, the epidemic. They haven't. We don't know what's going on because it's a closed and a secret society.
Well, China took the situation in Wuhan, which was quite dramatic, and by extreme interventions in terms of reducing movement, they were able to crush that epidemic. Those hospitals are gone. Look at the commerce. Stores are open now in China and nowhere else, whereas before it was the opposite. So it's a real thing that they took a significant number of cases, not only flattened it, but brought it down to very small levels. Now, as they open up, there will be slight rebounds, and it's very valuable for them to share where that's happening, because all the countries that have substantial epidemics now have to think, okay, once you get down the absolute level, before having a vaccine, what kind of activities should we reengage in? You know, probably manufacturing we can do, probably construction we can do. Hopefully, because of the number of young people involved, we can do education. But we're going to have this intermediate period of opening up, and it won't be normal until we get an amazing vaccine to the entire world.
Bill Gates, obviously his middle name is Vaccine, so keep your eyes on him. I just think he's a highly suspicious character. Gary, you have any thought on that?
He, as well as the UN, working in sync with each other, they seem to reward China. In fact, the UN Human Rights Council, which has a dark history of supporting and being closely allied with various Marxist leaders around the world, they just recently appointed China to a special panel on this controversial council. That's almost unbelievable, but it should tell us a lot. So it's not surprising to hear Gates praising China. What about talking about how this whole virus got started and the cover-up that went on in China and all of that?
Exactly.
Never mentioned by Gates
the
UN.
That's right.
And the UN consistently rewards those regimes that help fuel international crises and violate basic human rights. In fact, we left that council in 2018 because of its extreme corruption. And then UN Ambassador Nikki Haley called it, I quote her, a protector of human rights abusers and a cesspool of political bias, end quote. And good for her. She's one of the few people to be willing to take a stand and speak out on that council. Anything that comes out of the UN from these various councils, the World Health Organization or the Human Rights Council, strongly favors Marxism, globalization, socialism consistently. It's a pattern. It's not us jumping to conclusions. Any people that support them on a regular basis are part of this agenda, and Gates is one of those people, unfortunately.
And the World Health Organization is encouraging people, frankly, lots of outfits are encouraging people to stop using cash, to pay digitally only due to this virus. The WHO is telling the public to avoid cash. It's hardly a surprise. Research has found the coronavirus has been found to live on surfaces for as long as 9 days. Well, it's going to live on plastic too, folks, but nonetheless, Gary, it's kind of leaping out of the book of Revelation because they're pushing no more cash, no more cash. And I don't know of too many people who do carry a lot of cash any longer. Here again, when this becomes headline news, stop using cash, you have to start connecting some biblical dots.
Much of the sensational media coverage surrounding this virus is really intended, I believe, to facilitate a transition involving our currency and going cashless. That's where all of this is going. In fact, the central banks of many countries are, even as we speak, preparing for a switchover. Some of them have been ready for about 18 months or so. Others are in motion right now, making preparations. Everything that I'm getting from my sources is that the global currency, when it eventually comes out, will make use of digital technology and take the form of an electronic monetary unit. It will utilize distributed ledger crypto technology, which is, of course, readily available. Some of the international banks for a few years have been using the SDR, the special drawing rights, digital currency to settle their interbank accounts. So it's already being used in a limited way. They want to take this globally and take it down to the individual level where ultimately we are all using this electronic monetary unit of exchange. Before that can happen, as I said at the outset, I think we have to see a serious downturn in the global economy, and that's kind of what's underway right now. But I know the president is fighting for our economy very strongly. He wants to come out of it quickly because he realizes if things drag on much longer, it's going to do long-term damage. And so there's a real, I believe, a spiritual battle being waged on this front. There is a lot at stake. We all need to be praying for the president and vice president right now that God gives them wisdom to help our country pull out of this crisis very quickly, because the longer it drags on, the more time it gives the globalists to put in place the final pieces of their agenda.
For illustration, a year ago, there were 35 million people who had the common flu, almost 35,000 deaths. We had the swine flu, I referred to it earlier, 2009, infected 61 million people worldwide and caused almost 600,000 people to die. That was 2009. Back then, there was no weeping. There was no gnashing of teeth. Schools weren't shut. Churches were not closed. Professional sports kept on meeting. Disneyland was not boarded up. The NCAA tournament wasn't called off. So I think what the question is there some kind of global conditioning going on now that wasn't even going on a year ago, when thousands of people were falling to some of these other issues that I'm talking about, H1N1, 2009, just the regular flu. And my understanding is indeed that COVID virus is more destructive than the ordinary flu is. But nonetheless, the world didn't stop. Nothing stopped with some of these 61 million people falling ill in 2009 with thousands and thousands of deaths. 575,000, almost 576,000 deaths in 2009 with swine flu.
I would just say that what is different right now is things are further along technologically, but also President Trump's best argument for re-election this fall has
been his
record-strong economy.
That's right.
And if you can take that away from him, the odds of a far-left candidate winning the White House increases dramatically. So if you're a globalist, let's help collapse the economy to bring that about in their thinking, and that's what we're seeing right now.